Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it is Blog Talk Radio. It is the stars alive. It is Dustin and Chris, and we are going 90 minutes today. That is right, 90 minutes on a special occasion, actually. It's a Monday. It's a rare Monday. We have a lot on the plate today, actually. Four big topics, as I posted up on the Facebook page, as well as right in the middle of our page here. If you go to the Blog Talk page, if you're listening to the show. Also, another thing that's kind of cool that I've noticed is the Blog Talk Radio allows you to do several different things. Call in via phone also allows you to talk over a microphone. This is a little bit of a technical difficulty on our end, but thanks to those at Parkway Music in Clifton Park, New York. That's right, Parkway Music in Clifton Park, New York, who is sponsored by the station that I work at. They sponsor the station I work at, rather, is going to provide us with high-quality technical equipment in order to sound a little bit better over the air. So that's going to be cool. So anyways, we got a lot on the table today. Dustin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing good, Chris. How about you, man?
I'm feeling all right. You know, it's Monday, so, you know, it's a Cowboy Monday, and a lot of big things happened. In fact, the one big thing, as I posted on the Facebook page earlier this morning, if anybody saw that, which I did see, it reached about 50 people, which is always awesome, is Orlando Scandrick, the starting and most consistent cornerback for our Dallas Cowboys team, is expected to report. Now, rumors say here on the website that he did, in fact, report today to voluntary OTA camps here at Valley Ranch, and the reason why he did that is they're saying he wants a contract. By the end of the week, he wants to sort of have a new deal, a big signed deal, because again, Scandrick, as I posted, is supposed to make baby money. I mean, nothing really at all. I believe it's $1.8 million, which is still his rookie deal. So it's, I mean, I don't blame him. Pay the guy. He's been the most consistent of really anybody. I got my stats here in front of me. Yeah, $1.5 million base salary this year. I mean, that's, there are backups making that. So I'm looking at Orlando Scandrick here. He did not attend the first set of voluntary workouts due to this dispute. And every Dallas Cowboy fan in the country is, oh, no, he's holding out. We're going to miss him for all the thing, you know, because Jerry Jones is deciding all of the sudden out of the blue to be stingy, which is the first time that I've ever seen that happen. His scheduled base salaries are $3 million in 2016, 17, and 18. His base salary last season was $4.5 million. So he's only going down from here. Dustin, you've been watching the Cowboys just as long as I have, maybe even a little bit longer since you are a little bit older. Orlando Scandrick, not the biggest name in the world when you think of primetime cornerbacks, but, I mean, is he somebody that when you think of this team and an anchor of this defense, is he somebody you think of? I mean, does he deserve the money he wants?
I mean, so what is he looking for? You said he wants to be around like the $6 million a year. Is that what he was looking at?
He is looking for what his fellow cornerbacks got. Brandon Carr and Mo Claiborne. Both received $9 million guaranteed on a 2-year extension. So he's looking for, yes, you know, around that. I think he'd be happy with like 7 or 8, but you know, he just wants to be. Brandon Carr had $9 million guaranteed. He has a $50 million contract, though. Brandon Carr, which is asinine. So he's looking to be
so
similar to Carr.
The thing that I'm afraid of is just because somebody makes a mistake with one player in the past doesn't mean that we need to keep, you know, plugging along to stay consistent with that. Brandon Carr, he came from Kansas City, I believe, and when he was out there, he was producing. Okay, now I know you joke and you're like, oh, he can't cover the, you know, his side of the pillow and yada, yada, yada. I mean, he really, really looked bad against Beckham, especially with that, you know, the catch of the year, and you just saw him hanging all over Beckham. Yeah, and I get that Beckham's, an up and comer, and he's probably a top five wideout now. But my thing is, Carr came over with a big, inflated salary, and to me it was the name. When I heard that we acquired Brandon Carr, I was excited because I know he's being paid like a top 10 corner. So I'm thinking, okay, if he's getting paid like a top 10 corner and he's producing at Kansas City, then maybe he can do the same for us. But I guess that's another example of the flaw in the system of paying players in the NFL is you're always giving them a contract for what they did for you last year, and it's not what are you going to do for me in the future. And I guess it's something. It's similar to the DeMarco Murray thing, right? He wanted to be paid based on what he did last year, and then we're sitting here, Jerry's sitting there, Steve Jones is sitting there, and they're like, well, listen, we understand that you had a heck of a year last year, but statistics are telling us that you're in for a rough road ahead of you. So we don't want to pay you Adrian Peterson type money. And he didn't want to hear that, so he walked. So as far as Skandrick goes, listen, I remember one game, and this is me sucking, because I don't remember who it was against. But there was one game where Skandrick lit up the bench because we let up a lead. It was late in the season. He was screaming at the bench because we were just letting a team back in the game. And then when it came down to it and Romo marched down the field and got us like a 3-point lead. No, it was a 4-point lead because the opposing team needed a touchdown. Skandrick picked it off
in
the end zone to end the game. Yes, yes.
I think I know which one you're talking about, yeah. I can't off the top of my head remember the team either, but I remember that Skandrick getting heated.
But you remember
the
moment.
I do remember the moment, because
yeah.
I was expecting that to be somebody like a Dez or, somebody who's a fiery player. Somebody like Skandrick is sort of the silent assassin over the last couple of years. I mean, you don't often hear about this guy. When you think of the Cowboys, I mean, you think of a star-studded team, this lineup that they have, which on the offense is a whole bunch of Pro Bowlers, a whole bunch of stars on that team. And then the defense, you look at a patchwork makeshift defense, at least that's what they were known as last season. And, you look at the most veteran guy, at least one of the most veteran guys on that defense is Orlando Skandrick. He's been in the league and on the team since 2008. And, I mean, he's one of, I believe, and I'm going to find this in a minute, but I believe he's the only guy on the team who's still on the team from that time period, on the defensive side of the ball anyway. And, he makes plays, he's consistent, but he's never going to be the Darrell Revis, the Patrick Peterson, the Nnamdi Asamoah when he was in his prime. So he's not going to be that big-name guy that you think about. And even a former Cowboy, Deion Sanders, he's never going to be that because he doesn't have that flashy element to him. He's not flying all over the field. He's not a loud mouth on Twitter. He's not this and that, but dude makes plays. I mean, dude can ball. If you look at him, I got him here and his combined stats here and the notepad in front of me. And I mean, when he came out of college, this is his eighth season, he went to Boise State. His first year, I mean, he's got, 35 total tackles, one assisted tackle, and one sack. Okay, one sack in 09, 2.5 in 2010. This guy's not just making interceptions. He's getting sacks, too, which is unusual for a corner. And the only reason I bring that up is because I look at Patrick Peterson and Darrell Revis, and, I mean, Patrick Peterson, you look at his sack numbers, he has two. Okay, Darrell Revis has 2.5. Now, you look at Patrick Peterson has 15 interceptions. Darrell Revis has 23 interceptions. Skandrick's only got 7. But you look at what Skandrick can do. He can do everything. He intercepts the ball. He bats down a whole bunch of balls. He shuts down your top guy. He gets back there, stops the run, gets in for sacks. And the guy just doesn't get credit because he's been, other than last season, on a bottom 10 defense. I mean, he's been a piss-poor defense for most of his career. I think that's probably the reason he doesn't get the same kind of credit as the other two guys.
Yeah, I agree with you. You bring up a great point with he's the last of that dying breed of, the 08 team. And that might be a problem with this contract negotiation because, like you said, all of a sudden Jerry's cheap. I don't think that Jerry's cheap. I think that, like I said on the last show, I think Steven is really, really asserting himself and being like, you know, hey, Pops, relax. You know, let's not pull the trigger so quickly. You know, let's do our analytics. And I think they're being a lot more, you know, look at, I mean, let's think for a second, okay? Seattle lost this year, but the year that they won, they didn't have big number salary guys on that team. Sherman was still on his rookie deal. Wilson was still on his rookie deal. You didn't have any, like, you know, savvy veterans that they overpaid in free agency. These are – Pete Carroll took that team that was just dog shit, and he built it from the bottom up with a bunch of guys that nobody wanted in the draft that had character issues or PED issues or, you know, they're popping Adderall. This, he didn't give a crap. He's like, listen, you got a chip on your shoulder? All right, good, because I got a chip on my shoulder. Let's go mess this league up. And I think he had that right approach. I think he set the new standard for the template for building a, you know, a championship. Now, that's to build like a dynasty, because look at that, that's going to last over time, right? They lost a few players here and there that wanted to get paid, but the Seattle Seahawks are still looked at as a top three team in my book. Now, as far as the Patriots, what did they do? They went to the other end of the spectrum. They're like, hell, we're gonna old school New York Yankees this shit. We're going to buy ourselves a championship. Revis, get over here. We're going to do this. We're going to one and done. You know, so they overpaid. They got the veteran in there that they felt like they needed. And then look at, sure as shit, the year's over. They win the championship. See you later. Revis is going back to New York, and he's doing what he wants to do. What did Revis do? He signed a long-term deal. He could have signed a long-term deal in New England if he liked it, but he hated every moment of that, and he felt like he sold his soul just to win the championship. But he needed it because he didn't want everybody to be like, well, you were one of the best corners, but you never got the ring. He's got the ring now. First ballot Hall of Famer. Good for you, Revis. You did it. But as far as Skandrick, he is the last of that 2008 Jerry Jones mentality. I'm going to overpay and throw money at the situation. So that could be the problem. He could still have that I'm getting paid mentality, because he saw so many people before him do that to Jerry. And he saw Jerry shell out, you know, $10 million. Here you go, bud. I got it. Don't worry about it. You know, I'm comfortable. I want to know what you're comfortable with, but I'm comfortable giving Skandrick like a $5, $6 million a year deal, because he is not that top-tier corner. I'm sorry. He's not a shutdown, but he's definitely not garbage. So he's like...
No, he played a lot better in the slot.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were saying, I cut you off there. You continue with that? What?
No. Yeah, go ahead. No, my thing was, like I said, I think Skandrick, I feel comfortable at the $5 or the $6 million, that category. You know, that second tier down, you know, like not that, you know, not Darrell Revis, not, you know, Pat Peterson, but throw him down in that next level. Like, he can do it. He's solid. And like what you said, he plays with heart, which is what I love. You play with heart. You play with passion. I love it. You don't always need to be screaming at your teammates on the cameras like Dez does. That's just a personality difference. That's all. He likes to show everything on his sleeve. That shows passion. But Skandrick, I mean, he's a silent assassin. Like you said, he's a silent leader. So I think he's worth a chunk of change, but I cannot go anywhere near Revis money for this kid. I'm sorry. I just can't do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't necessarily think he wants Revis money, but he does at least want to be, you know, the better player on his team in terms of what he gets into his bank account, because he's been the best corner on this team since 2008. That's not saying much, but he has been. And you look at what Brandon Carr is doing here, and you know, Nick Eatman, the Cowboys beat writer, pointed this out on the website earlier, is that he's got Brandon Carr on the other side, who is going to make $8 million in base salary in 2015, is the eighth highest paid cornerback in the NFL.
Right, but now, Chris, are we justifying – see, that's where we've fallen in trouble, right? Because some moron decided that we're going to overpay Brandon Carr. Now we're going to overpay Skandrick, because he's like, well, look at me. I'm beating the shit out of this guy on the other side. Why am I not making what he's making? See, you see what I'm saying? It's a dangerous slippery slope.
I feel like we don't have a choice here, because he's going
to
walk.
You know what I feel
don't.
Like, though? I feel like Carr needs to be gone. That's what I think. I think Carr is overpaid. I think he's not providing any kind of leadership in the locker room. I've seen him get burnt more over the last 2 years than do anything of value for us. I haven't seen him get a game-winning pick or bat down or tackle. All I see is him getting crossed up left and right. It reminds me of when Terrence Newman was, like, past his prime and he was hanging on for a leg. I felt bad watching him. You know, I just,
well,
I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm faster than Terrence Newman. I'm 245 pounds, so.
I get that. So, but think of this, right? This is what I'm worried about the most. I'm all for Skandrick getting his money. But if I'm on if I'm like a defensive coach for this team, I'm getting rid of Carr, and then let's bring the new guy in. You know what I mean? Let's bring Jones up. I know you said he has the potential to possibly play safety, this, that, and the other. But I think the value in this league is having a freak athlete corner. And I think we got that with Jones through the draft. Now, yes, it's way too early. And, you know, hell, it could – same thing that happened, what was it, a year or two ago? Yeah, it was last year. You know, practice field and freaking Doug Martin takes Sean Lee out for the year. Anything can happen. So I don't want to rely on Jones showing – excuse me, Jones showing up and being the savior for the team. But I'm telling you – think about this, too. Where's Claiborne going to fit in? You know what I mean? We got too many corners, if you ask me. I understand that nickel's a big thing, but
we didn't have any depth. So,
right.
So we need it. We needed it because corner's been our weakest spot for years. And, you know, our big thing was we were the joke of the league when it came to secondary for the last 4 or 5 seasons before last year. And Skandrick was a big part of that because Claiborne went down early again. And, you know, you look at what he did last year. Again, Nick Eatman reported on here that he had a really good season last season. And despite his two-game suspension, which is probably what eliminated him from making the Pro Bowl, he was a solid player last season. He didn't allow very many touchdowns to get by him. Last season he had one sack, but he had two interceptions last season. So, I mean, I know that's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but he batted down what? It says here, 42 balls or something like that. He was pretty good, and he drew. I don't say drew double teams, but he took the number one receiver away from a lot of teams. And did he get beat sometimes? Yeah, but he also made, you know, some good plays. And you look at what he did here. He's being paid his salary right now. I think personally, he's not Revis, he's not Patrick Peterson, but he deserves to be paid higher than the 47th cornerback in the league. He's 47th highest paid, and for what he does on the field, sure, he might be the 47th most popular name. If you ask some run-of-the-mill NFL fan, you know, who their favorite corner is, their chances are, unless they're a diehard Cowboys fan, they're not going to say Skandrick, but, you know, they might not even know who he is or what number he wears, but he produces sort of in the same – he might not be in the same sentence as Revis and Peterson, but he's in the same paragraph. And I
right.
think that, you know, he's productive, and that's what we need. And the one good thing is you mentioned him being a leader. I thought for sure that he's going to do what all these players do, and that's hold out. As soon as he didn't show up to the first OTAs, I thought, oh, boy, here we go. We're going to lose Skandrick, and, you know, Stephen Jones is going to be like, let him walk. We got enough. And, you know, we're going to lose our most productive player. But he showed up today. He wants to get a job done. He says a deal done, rather. He says he wants to be in Dallas. And I like that. I like the fact that he showed up despite being unhappy with his contract. That shows a little bit of, you know, fortitude, shows a little bit of the respect that Jason Garrett commands. And, you know, I definitely think that he deserves to get paid. But like I said, I don't think that they're going to give him a lot of money. I really don't. I think that they're going to give him.
What are you comfortable with? Give me your number.
I mean, Brandon Carr's contract is $50 million over, what, 5 years or something? So this year he's supposed to make $8 million in base salary. I would be comfortable. Again, I'm not very good at math, so the long-term figures I'm probably not going to be able to spew out off the top. But for, like, let's just say hypothetically it was a one-year deal. It won't be, but let's just say it was. I'd be comfortable with him making $4.5 million, maybe.
We're in agreement, you know.
Yeah, I don't think he would like that, but that's what I think he would be comfortable with. And he's still young enough; he's only 28 years old. You put him on sort of what you did with Greg Hardy. You put him on sort of what you did with who's the other guy there? Well, Carr. They've are working on doing this with, but put them on what you did with Hardy, which is incentive-based, performance-based contract, and say, okay, we'll give you 4.5 now. If you turn into, out of the blue, a Darrell Revis-like player, a Patrick Peterson-like player, we'll give you your $8 million that you want that Carr's making. And, you know, there's a very good chance. There, actually, I'm reading stuff from the insiders here. There's a very good chance that they could take some of that money away from Carr and restructure that deal and give some of that money to Skandrick. So now I'm sitting there thinking, okay, because of the salary cap, now how's that going to be in the locker room? How's that going to affect Brandon Carr, who gets a bad rap?
That's what I'm saying, man.
Okay,
no.
The player.
Yeah,
so this is an interesting
situation.
This is the
problem. It's a cancer.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation right now. I mean, Carr, I think he gets a bad rap. I mean, his $50 million contract is the only thing people really see. I mean, he's a big physical cornerback. He's played better down the stretch. I mean, he takes a while to turn on, but he's played better late in the season. I mean, he was a really good player. He was actually very good, if you look at his numbers, when they had Anthony Spencer and DeMarcus Ware. But since then, he hasn't really had a pass rush. He's been exposed. And I think if the pass rush has improved, which it has, he might be a little bit better. Skandrick will probably play in the slot, and they'll put Byron Jones on the outside. And I think this could be a pretty formidable secondary.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm just so exhausted thinking about Brandon Carr. How old is he?
Grab it right now. Brandon Carr. I've got all my little
he's
got to
be
30. He's 28. He's the same age as Skandrick.
Okay, see, so that blows me away right there, because this is the other thing that I hear everybody say. Give it the eye test, right? You watch on the field, mm-hmm. and you watch the intensity in play-to-play-to-play with each player. Dude, it's not even close. Skandrick plays with heart and passion, and he's flying all around the field. I've seen him, you know, almost give up on a couple of plays but get back into it and at least make a play on the ball. When Carr gets burnt, he's done. He's like in a light jog. He doesn't even care anymore. Unless he's being burnt down the field, and then it's so obvious that when they're in the film room the next day, the coach is going to make him do 800 laps after, because they're going to be like, what the hell? You know, I just don't think – I don't know, man. I don't know what my – I think I'm so hell-bent on that that template that Seattle has with that, with the young team. That average age is like at 27. That's where I want to be, man. I don't want to invest in washed-up veterans that, you know, what did you do? The only guy I would have ever paid for what he did was Ray Lewis. And people are going to hate me for saying that, but he is literally a guy that can walk in and inspire a bunch of shitheads to get their acts and then just pull together and do great things, because he's that intense. But other than that, I'm not paying anybody.
You're outside of a bar.
Yeah, yeah. So my thing is, this whole money thing, you know, well, he's 47, you know, paid this, that, and the other. Who's the highest paid quarterback in the league? It's laughable.
Highest paid corner?
Quarterback.
Oh, quarterback. I want to say, hold on, let me pull it up here on my iPad, but I want to say Flacco.
I'm pretty sure it's Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler has the most, he had the biggest contract through Chicago. He was year to year the highest paid quarterback on paper because were morons.
Yeah, Jay Cutler. Well, Aaron Rodgers, if you look at his total deal, but yeah.
No,
Jay
we're
Cutler's
not. No, no,
there.
No. We're not doing. Yeah, we're not doing total, because anybody can make out, you know, a 7-year deal. Well, I'm doing. I want year to year.
Year, right?
Jay Cutler.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is my
year
point,
to year
right?
To year. Okay.
This is why. This
is
why
is Cutler.
You're,
yes. They gave him some stupid contract 2 years ago.
But see, okay, so this is my point, right? So all of a sudden, Jay Cutler gets traded to, I don't even care. Let's just throw out a fake team. And then that hungry quarterback is on the team, and he's like, well, what the hell, man? He's like, I'm outperforming this dick. Pay me like him. You can't have that mentality. You know what I mean? Just because some moron in Chicago was like, well, Jay Cutler's the new MVP of the league. Let me throw $25 million a year at him. That's a joke. You can't do that, and you can't do business like that. If that's going to affect the locker room, if Skandrick looking across the locker room sees Brandon Carr and is like, I need $8 million a year, or I'm walking, I get rid of freaking Carr before I don't pay Skandrick. And I'm telling you that 150%, wouldn't even hesitate. Brandon Carr's gone. Skandrick's my number one. And then I'm going to work with either Claiborne, pray to God he doesn't get injured, pulling Jones into the mix. Because that was another thing I had written down in my notes, Chris. Skandrick is great. We're going to pay him. But if we keep Brandon Carr, where is there any room for what happens to Claiborne? What happens to Jones? Jones is not a guy I want.
Deal.
Right. Well, no. It's not even that I'm talking about restructuring deals. It's a body on the field. Starting cornerbacks. You know what I mean? I don't want Carr out there as a starting corner. I want the new kid who's supposed to be a freak. I want to see what he has. I don't want to just let him sit and, you know, and rot behind Brandon Carr because we're hanging on to a bad contract, so he must be a starter. No way. If we got a kid who broke the record for a broad jump at the draft combine because he's such a nasty athlete, he's 6 feet tall, and he's built. I want to see him out there up against starting wide receivers. I want to see what he does because he might be the next diamond in the rough, but we'll never know if he doesn't get out there. Practices, all the camps right now are saying that he's killing it in training camps. In all these OTAs, they're saying he's doing awesome and that he looks like a starting corner. So that's a huge problem to me because if he looks like a starting corner, I want the rookie out there starting, not this washed up, you know, old bag who's getting paid way too much money because Kansas City were freaking drinking when they did the contract.
True. And I mean, well, yeah, actually, when you look at it, you were right in a way. Jay Cutler is the highest paid quarterback ever, but that's his long in history, but that's his long-term deal. Most base salary, the highest base salary for quarterbacks in 2015 is going to be Drew Brees with 18.7 and Tony Romo right behind him at 17. But
right.
I totally get what you're saying, though. He is – Jay Cutler has been a sieve. He's been terrible. In fact, one of those interceptions this season, I believe, for Skandrick came against Jay Cutler. But that's off topic. I'm just saying, yes, if it were me – and we do have to move on. We do have some other topics. But if it were me, I would give Carr one more trial a year. Because you do have some other corners on the roster. You do have Wilcox. Well, he can play safety or corner. You do have Claiborne coming back. You know, you got this new kid. You've got some corners now you can work with. I give Carr one more year and say, listen, this has to be a breakout year for you. This is one of the years that we have high expectations. We need to see something from you. And he's going to be tested early. We've got four of the top five quarterbacks in the league the first 5 weeks of the season. So he's going to be tested early. But if it were me, I would say, because it's easy to say, oh, yeah, well, you know what, you don't perform, you're gone. But then you look at the cap hit. You look at releasing him with 3 years left on his deal, and you've got the $50 million looming. You know, you got to pay him somehow. He's got to get paid somehow. So it just creates a crazy cap hit situation in this salary cap era, which could end up burying us. But hopefully Byron Jones.
I mean, you can't tell me that he's not you can't tell me that he's untradeable for like a mid-round pick though. Any team would take him, you know what I mean?
Possibly
any garbage team that's rebuilding.
Yeah.
We can't cut him. Obviously we can't just cut him and get him off the books, but I'm saying if push comes to shove and moving him is what we want to do, which is what I hope we get to, because I'm telling you, give him one more chance, it's fine, but do not let it stunt the growth of these guys that are coming up behind them that are young, hungry. I'm saying if you can trade him and you're not getting any kind of penalty and there's a team that's god-awful out there that probably needs a corner, like, you know, a bad team, the Jacksonvilles of the world, or, you know, even the Bucks, they don't really have any good talent, you know, for corner. There are tons of teams that could use corners, you know, and for a third rounder, I think that's very doable because they understand that team that we'd be giving him to would understand that it's as much beneficial to us to shed the salary as it is to get a pick back. So that's part of the deal, I think. That's part of the unspoken deal, I would understand.
True, and just make sure that you don't let them do what Murray did and go within the division. But speaking of leaders, and guys who need to step up big this season, we're going to shift from a guy that doesn't have a question mark to a guy that we know, if he has any kind of punctuation on him at all, it's an exclamation point, and that is Dez Bryant. And Dez, as you may know, if you've been following the situation, is also a little unhappy with his contract. Throughout the course of the offseason, they were working on getting Murray back, so they had to restructure Dez's deal, not give Dez that long-term deal in order to open up money to get Murray. They weren't able to open up enough, but they had already tagged Dez. Now, Dez went on Twitter. He starts talking about doesn't feel the love, doesn't feel appreciated, starts, you know, running his mouth off a little bit like he's known to do. And I'm sitting there like, you know, and I mentioned this last show, is Dez going to play 100%? Is he going to be in it? I mean, you seem to think that 100% he's going to be in it, but I wasn't sure, but my fears and suspicions were sort of negated a little bit this past week because Dez, as I put on the Facebook page, showed up out of the blue for no reason. I mean, they're not even doing veteran camps. They're still doing a lot of rookie work, and Dez just shows up, walks in, and he says, and the quote, again, reported by DallasCowboys.com, is, "I just want to be here for my teammates." He looked at was Mickey, believe it was written by, was it Eatman? It could have been Eatman, but it was one of the Cowboys. No, it was Mickey actually, one of the writers, and he said he had a long conversation with him. And Dez is 100% focused. He said he's willing to sit down and talk, but you know, the season is this season, and you know, it made me feel a little bit good about Dez and what sort of Dez brings to the table here. It made me feel, you know, a little bit less nervous, per se. But do you think that a long-term deal would or should pretty soon, like possibly before the start of preseason? Or do you think that they're going to let him play as a franchise player this season and then maybe work on it next year when they get more cap money opened up by the league?
Listen, I think the way that they structured this Hardy deal is it's a prepay type deal, right? So as the weeks go that he doesn't play, they keep money in their pocket. And then once he finally gets on the field, pending an appeal or whatever the hell we're doing right now, once they allow him back, right, week 10, let's say the 10 thing holds up, shows up, here you go, here's your $1 million, you know? And so they'll finally start paying him. So that's why it's blowing my mind, because I feel like every day that passes is an opportunity lost. And I've been on the record. I said it last show. Pay Dez, okay? In my eyes, he's the best wide receiver in the league. I don't care what Beckham's doing. He looks great because he's 6 feet tall and he's jumping and spreading out all over the place. That's great. But at the end of that game, which, you know, 4th and 2, and that was a freaking catch. That was one of the best, like, I'm going to take this out of everybody else's hands. I'm doing it myself. I'm going to go get it. That's the type of catch that Dez does. And you heard Buck and Aikman say it, that he's the only guy, he's the best in the league at that. He'll go get that ball. He doesn't wait for it to drop into the basket. So I'm saying pay a guy like that because it takes intensity, it takes heart to be that type of a receiver. And he needs that money. Now, the thing I'm worried – so back to what you were saying. Yes, a deal needs to be done now because I think every day that passes, every week that passes, every game that passes that he's working on that franchise tag is a little bit of hostility that's building up inside of him. And he's like, you know, it becomes more of a, I'm not trying to torch this team right now. It becomes like, I'm going to go out, I'm going to get 150 yards, 2 TDs, and I'm going to look up at the office where Jerry and Steven is, and I'm going to say, pay me. And it's going to be more of, you know, like that disgruntled son looking up at Pops for, you know what I mean, the approval. Like, am I good enough to get this money yet? And I don't want it to get to the point where Dez is so, like, you know, for that and so, like, used to being, like, pissed off at his own guy that he finally is like, you know what, screw it. I'm going to go freaking, you know what I mean? I'm going to go to New England. They need a receiver. I'm going to go to, you know, or hell, you know, tell me he wouldn't go to the Redskins. You know what I mean? Tell me he wouldn't go somewhere to completely stick it to Jerry after he completely mishandled this whole deal. He would. He would do that. If DeMarco Murray is capable of going to the rival team just so he has the opportunity to play against you and make you regret that decision twice a year, oh, man. If I'm – put yourself in that situation. if I'm in that situation, I'm that great, and my own boss isn't willing to pay me, you bet your butt that I will turn down more money just to stay in the division and look at him every time I score a touchdown and be like, this is what happens. You know?
Well, trust
me, I
deal with that every day, so I know exactly what you're saying. But, no, I look at it a little bit of a different way. I mean, I want to see him, in the blue and silver and white for a long time, and I think he deserves to be. And what is my computer doing here? It's talking to me. I'm turning the volume down. I think he deserves that money, but I look at it sort of this way. Where is it coming from? You know, I mean, they restructured a bunch of deals. They would have to take money from Romo, which he said he's willing to do. They have to take money from Carr, which I don't know if he's willing to do or not, to give Dez top three receiver money, which he definitely deserves, sure. But you look at it this way, though. Mickey Spagnola, again, from DallasCowboys.com beat writer, reported, and he put this in exact quotes. He says that Dez realizes that at some point this contract stalemate will end and that the two sides will compromise on a long-term deal, making each quite happy, or he will play for his $12.3 million franchise tender, which will appease each but not exactly make the other side rejoice. So Dez realizes that he's going to play regardless. He also said that Dez came in and poked his head in the office to speak with Jason Garrett and sort of, talked with him a little bit the other day, and things seem to be pretty good with him. He's in good spirits. But the way I look at it is he's making $12.8 million this season. If I do the quick math, that factors out to $754,705 per week. $754 per week. And, I mean, a reasonable man would not turn his nose to that. I mean, he would add up to more money in 17 weeks than he's made in his whole career. He makes more money.
I know, but
this
in today's NFL, players want that long-term deal. They want the stability because
for
you
security,
see people going
security,
down every
sure, but
yeah.
But Dez has been healthy. I mean, but this is, if I was Dez, I'd look at it this way. I'm a hometown kid. I'm from Galveston, Texas. I played at Oklahoma State. They're also called the Cowboys. They traded up to get me. I was the best receiver in the league last year. I'm making more money this year with just the franchise tag than I've made in my entire 5-year career, and that's in 1 year. He doesn't want to do anything to sort of uproot the locker room. I mean, Dez even was quoted, as Mickey Spagnola says, in the past 2 years, the locker room has changed. There's something special in here. Dez has said over and over and over again he wants to be in Dallas, and I think that Stephen Jones is going to take the reins, and Stephen Jones is going to say, listen, Dez, we want to pay you. We want you to be the big guy. We want you to be our franchise guy. We don't have the money this year. We get more salary cap money next year. Romo's going to restructure because he's going to be ancient. We're going to have a question mark on Brandon Carr and his salary. Play your card out this season, and I will put it, if I'm Stephen Jones, I say, listen, you're making $12.8 million. It doesn't go against the cap, which is good, but you're making $12.8 million. I will put it on paper that if you have the same type of season or better than you had this past season, I will give you the biggest wide receiver contract in NFL history, but I need to wait until the money frees up. And if he can do that, and if Dez agrees to that, I don't see a problem with it. Because, I mean, $754,000 a week is more money than 90% of this country is going to see in their lifetime. So that is – nobody would turn that down. For 1 year, to make that in 1 year is – if I'm Dez – I know I want the big money. I know I have an ego, but Dez is the Deion Sanders of the offense, and he wants to, look good, feel good, play good, and get paid. And he's doing all of those right now.
So,
he's getting paid.
Yeah, my thing is this, right? I try to take myself and put myself into the mind of the player, okay? So I'm thinking, all right, this guy's, a little disgruntled. He's had some, attitude problems in the past, behavioral issues. All right, I get it. Okay, so now I'm thinking, pay me. Okay, why aren't you paying me? Yeah. Well, the money's not there, and, you know, well, we got some weird stuff going on. You changed your agent on us. We're not cool with that. You know, so I think back to when that story first came out last year. Okay, Dez fires his, you know, I don't know, longtime agent. And I guess that agent was very good, you know, with Jerry Jones, done a lot of deals in the past and, you know, buddy, buddy this. Now, a lot of people were like, well, if you have an agent that's in good with, you know, your owner and GM, that probably doesn't spell big dollars for you. But, I mean, I don't remember the guy's name. If you look him up, he's been in the league for a long, long time. And so he switched. He got rid of him, and he decided to sign with Roc Nation, which is obviously Jay-Z, the glitz, the glam, you know, the music videos, you know, chilling in the clubs. But this is
look
what
about,
blows my mind.
Look about baseball, same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and that's what happened with Cano. So, and what happened with Cano, right? He left the Yankees, okay? A team that overpaid.
Stupid amount of money.
Exactly. But a team that overpaid for Jacoby Ellsbury to come from Boston, but the Yankees were like, you know what, we're not dealing with Roc Nation and you guys and your new, we think we're taking over the sports industry attitude where we're going to overpay by, that much. And I think that's the same thing that's going on with Jerry. I think he's not digging this whole Jay-Z thing where, yeah, well, you get your, you know, you'll get your superstar when we get our money, because it's just there. I really think that's what forced Cano out of town in New York, and look what he signed with. A very small market team. So I'm worried the same type of thing could happen here where Dez is like, okay, well, if you love me so much, pay me my money. Okay, well, can we, you know, and then Jerry and Steven are like, well, can we try to meet halfway on a number? No, I want number one. I want, you know what I mean? I can just see that attitude spilling out of them in negotiations. Dez is not the negotiator. It's Jay-Z. It's whatever particular agent of Roc Nation that's working with them. So Dez is not, I don't think, in the office when they're talking numbers. So as much as you're saying, you know, Dez is about the team and Dez is like, hey, I love you guys. Dude, DeMarco was that way. DeMarco was like that. Tony Romo's been on record by saying DeMarco Murray is the greatest teammate he's ever had. That speaks volumes considering Jason Witten's his freaking best man. So DeMarco Murray was one of the best teammates that any of them ever had, and he bounced. Because you know what? He was wronged by the Joneses. He felt, listen, if you're going to play around with me, this is my livelihood. You guys make billions of dollars a year, and you're literally penny-pinching when it comes to shelling out the guys that actually bust their behinds on the field. I'm the worst person to ask about these contract questions, Chris, because I am so for players getting their money, especially knowing the long-term injuries, concussions, you know, the whole big lawsuit that's going on with the NFL right now. Like, what these guys do is not a body's on the line, and 9 times out of 10 are going to be in a wheelchair by the time they're, you know, 60 or 70. So give them as much money as they can freaking get right now, and, you know, let's hope that they save it up so when these doctor bills start spilling in when they get older and they start falling apart, they can pay for them. Because you can't – how can you get insurance if you're, like, a high-risk, you know, professional athletes? It's not like, you know, United Healthcare is up in the NFL, like, you know, looking to give out personal health policies to every player. No way. They're way too, you know, they're way too high risk. So they have to pay everything out of pocket. And I don't know if you've ever been to the, you know, the doctors without insurance, but that stuff's freaking, it ain't cheap. So I'm just saying, man, I don't like what's going on. You know, Dez Bryant, like I said, the proof is in the pudding. He's producing, he's doing big things, he's always up there statistically as one of the best wide receivers, and then, like I said, that eyeball test, when you see this freak out there lining up wide, let's go back to the play call, 4th and 2, and Romo decides to throw a freaking 30-yard
Hail
Mary. I
hated the play call, though. I did not like the call, though.
I hate the best
in the league, run the ball,
Exactly. I don't want to trail too far off choice, but I off subject, but you and I are in agreement, man. But Romo said after the game, which made me feel a little bit better, is that all game they were waiting for single coverage on Dez, and that's the only time they gave it to him. So he's like, fuck it, I'm throwing it up. And he did it. And, dude, when I saw him throw it, my stomach dropped because I thought it was going out of bounds because that was such a high throw. But, again, like I said, Dez, he goes up and he gets it. That corner couldn't even get to his chest. The guy, that Dez was so high up in the air. He's like, no, I'm doing this. And then, because he leaped forward because he was trying to get the touchdown, because that's the type of guy he is, we're going to take it away. So, whatever, I don't want to talk about that. But my point is he's a playmaker. He does great things. He's passionate. You got to pay him. You can't keep messing with him with this stuff. You can't keep playing with his, you know, his motions. I understand, you know, well, he's making $750,000 a week. Da, da, da. Dude, that's nothing to these guys. Very minimal to
him. I guess it seems a lot to me.
I think, you know, of course, to me and you, I get it. But I think if you were to ask him, would you prefer a long-term deal or that $12 million this year, he would have said a long-term deal to avoid getting the franchise tag easy.
Well, for anybody listening out there, we do have a couple of listeners. I'm looking on air here, so feel free to call in. Call me number 713-955-0359. I had a very good call from Cody in Minnesota last week on the show. But for anybody out there listening, and if you watch movies and you know you're a movie buff, Dez Bryant and Dustin feel much the same, and it's much of this.
Business bad? Fuck you, pay me. Oh, you had a fire? Fuck you, pay me. Place got hit by lightning, huh? Fuck you, pay me.
The Goodfellas, which is a great movie. That's pretty much how Dez feels. That's pretty much how Dustin feels regarding the situation. He thinks he should get paid. I think Dez should man up, play this season and get the contract next year. Oh, I love it when we disagree. We don't have too much time left, about 45 minutes or so to go, so we are going to move on a little bit because we do have two more topics plus our new segment that we are debuting. And one of them is Tony Romo. The guy in Dallas, the quarterback, the field general, the quarterback who, in my opinion, should be top five in the league in terms of ability, at least, and his age, that big old 30-plus. In fact, I think he'll be 35 when this season goes off. Okay, he says he has 5 years left. I don't know if that back's going to hold up for 5 years. But what are we going to do? We got Brandon Weeden. We didn't take a quarterback in the draft. A lot of people thought, you know what, we don't need running back. Take a Romo replacement. Do what New England did last year, bringing in Jimmy Garoppolo, which was a shock to a lot of people, and Tom Brady wasn't too excited about it, but bring in somebody like that. I don't think we need him. Dustin, we talked about in the production meeting and a little bit on social media before this about kid who may already be there, and his name is Dustin Vaughn. Dustin Vaughn is also a local Texas kid. He is very productive, at least in college he was anyway, and he has more so the physical tools that you need and that you look for in a passing league. I mean, the dude is 6'5", 235. He's got a Ben Roethlisberger-type body. The problem is he played in a small little school, West Texas A&M, and he really didn't play against anybody. But he finished his career with 10,525 total yards and 123 touchdowns. For anybody out there who was following our Facebook page, which there are a few, and we thank you for that, I wrote I want to call it a blog, but I guess an article on this kid earlier, and you look at his stats coming out, and everyone's talking about, oh, undrafted free agent. Tony Romo was an undrafted free agent. This kid was undrafted. Well, he's had better stats than Romo. Romo played in a more competitive division, sure, but he's still D1. And you look at him coming out, he outperformed Romo in college. He's got the tools, and they really feel like this kid could be the next big thing. They passed on taking a quarterback when they could have gotten Bryce Petty. They could have gotten, I think Brett Hundley fell that far. Shane Mannion was there. There were so many guys that they could have brought in to develop. But this kid, I don't know. I don't know how much work on him you've done or how much research on him you've done. But I think number 10 could surpass number 9 and could actually be something special here.
I agree, Chris. All right, so the way I look at it is this. Number 9 is playing, and he's playing well. But just like our caller called up last week, who I love, by the way, I checked out a couple of his online YouTube videos, and thought he was very funny and creative. So if he wants to call back, we're more than happy to talk to him again. But like he brought up, one little hit on that back, and Romo is done. Because that back injury that he has that's now happened twice, that's a serious deal. And it was so serious to the point where Mrs. Romo didn't even want Papa Bear to go back to work anymore because she's afraid that he'll be paralyzed if he takes another hit, because that's how serious, you know, these spinal injuries can be. So Romo is obviously one of the toughest guys I've ever seen on the field. He reminds me a lot of Brett Favre as far as just that freaking, you know, almost that hillbilly body slash attitude. Like, I don't give a crap, you know, inject me with whatever you got to do. I'm going back onto the field. You know, a lot of the times when he was hurt, the equipment staff had to kidnap his helmet so he wouldn't go back into the game. You know, he was out there with two years ago. Yeah. And 2 years ago, I thought it was a punctured lung and like a broken collarbone. And that was when he came back against Stanford and threw the game-winning deep pass to, who was it? I don't know. But he basically got the game.
Oh, no, it was Jesse Holly. He was one of those walk-ons when they were doing that Michael Irvin series. I forgot what it was
called now,
but they were doing the Michael Irvin series. It was Jesse Holly. Yeah. And that was actually, I was still in New Hampshire at that point, living in Nashua. So that was three or plus years ago. When he left the game. I think he had broken ribs and a partially punctured lung. Yeah, came back into the game winner.
Yeah, so this is the toughness we're talking about. But at some point, he's got to start thinking about those two kids. He's got, you know, his beautiful wife, and he's got to be like, okay, life after football. He's a warrior on the field. Yeah. He's a warrior on the field. He does not want to go down, but it's going to happen. I do not think Romo is going to do the traditional – I've had my time, you know, it's been great, but thank you, I'm retired. I think he's going to get taken out, and unfortunately it's going to suck when it happens, but I think he's going to go down with injuries because these defensive players are only getting faster and stronger as we speak, and I think eventually that'll catch up to Romo. With his elusiveness, he's going to roll out of the pocket in the wrong direction one day, and he's going to get folded up, and then it's going to be, just like I said, you know, our call last week, he's going to be sitting back at home on a cheese farm somewhere. So I just think, yeah, exactly. I think I like Vaughn. Like you said, he's got the body. He's got that Brady-esque body. He's that 6'5", that big. I'm looking over, you know what I mean? I can stand up tall and throw it. He really does look good when he's in, you know, throwing in warm-ups and stuff, because I remember last year when people were looking at him, they said they were raving about him in practice. He was doing well, but obviously Whedon's the number two and Vaughn's the number three. So like what you said, you wanted to know what this does for Whedon's development. I think Whedon's just kind of, he's going to be a journeyman. I don't see him ever being a starting quarterback again. I think that was a very bad experiment in Cleveland. Yeah. And I just think, I'm hoping Romo has at least two more years left, because I think what they're building with this team is a Super Bowl caliber team, and that's not just me being a blind fan. I think if they put a pass rush together that can get to the quarterback and get after the one-legged man, like happened against Rodgers when he's hobbling around making us look stupid because he had 7 seconds to throw the ball every snap. If we get a guy that can get after the QB, and then we have a secondary that can cover, point where the pass rush is coming in so fast on that opposing QB, they only have 3 seconds to throw the ball. We joke about we could run behind that offensive line. If we had a pass rush that could get to the QB in 3 seconds, you and I could play corner. It doesn't matter, dude. The QB doesn't have enough time to look, you know. So it's just one of those things where I'm saying I hope to God that Romo lasts 2 years. Give me a solid 2 years. Let's make a run at this ring. And then if he goes down, that gives Vaughn 4 years on the bench to learn. Let him study. Let him understand the playbook. Let's hope Garrett sticks around. I love Garrett. I think he's good. He bums me out a lot. He seems to have no spine in certain situations. But Romo, being the warrior that he is, I see Romo barking to Garrett a lot, being like, let's go for it. Let's go for it. And then it seems like Garrett will defer to Romo in the appropriate situations. So I think Garrett's going to get, you know, he'll loosen up a little bit. And I just think Vaughn, give him 4 years on the bench, like I said, let him know. But, you know, out of all those stats that you read, the one thing that's not in a stat is, like, heart, okay, is heart.
True.
Is
well,
passion.
We don't know what this is because he's thrown 3 NFL snaps now all in preseason. So
right.
We don't know. But
so I just feel like, look at Romo, right, undrafted free agent, came in, Parcells, he was the fourth QB on the Cowboys roster when Parcells called him up, when Bledsoe was the starter. Romo was a practice guy. He was pumped he got the phone call. He showed up. He had like a $15,000 offer from, what was it? I thought I thought he said San Diego or somewhere in the AFC, and he almost took that, but he took less money to go to Dallas because Sean Payton, who's also, I think it's Wisconsin. Where did Romo go to college?
Eastern Illinois.
Eastern Illinois. They're both Eastern Illinois guys. So him and Sean Payton have always been in contact. They've always been buddy-buddy. And back in the day, Payton was working under Parcells, gave Romo a call and was like, hey, I know you got that 15 grand to go over there, but we'll throw you 10. Just come with us. Just trust me. We're the better organization. And he ended up doing it. And then look what panned out. So Romo sat there and eventually Bledsoe was throwing donuts and it looked awful. Parcells was like, get the hell out of here. Romo, get in there. And then first game, I even think, against the Giants, Romo still let off with like a pick because it was jitters. But he kind of did some crazy things that people were like, whoa, look at the backup. Then the next week, Romo got the start, and that's when Romo momentum started. And out of nowhere, he's just lighting people up because he was a gunslinger. And that's what happens. You have that heart. You have that I'm not going to be the undrafted free agent. You should have drafted me mentality. So if that kid, if Dustin Vaughn has that, and like I said, we'll never know until the moment happens. If he has that, then what the hell, man? We might have something good waiting for us, but we won't know until that moment happens.
Sure, and you know, he's young, and you know, they've mentioned several times on the website that they want to sort of develop him from where he was last year to where they want him to be. They're obviously grooming this kid. They obviously see something in him. I haven't seen him enough, and, you know, I never pay attention to the preseason for the most part, but I will start paying a little bit more attention in the preseason now that I know what we have. I don't even think he was active for all the games last season, so I'm going to watch the preseason. I'm going to see sort of what he can do, and, you know, if Romo does have a game like the Redskins game where he's just getting clobbered, and which really to me was shocking that, you know, that game, just the sort of the watch, the way that they were almost like they didn't care what else they did other than take him out. If that happens again, Whedon can only go so far. I mean, he was getting booed at home last year. I mean, and there was more buzz around this Cowboy organization and more sellout performances and more sellout tickets and more fan support last season than we've had in a decade, and we're still getting booed at home, Whedon was. So I think Whedon could sort of be like that guy who he's going to be second because he's a veteran, but he's going to come in, he's going to suck, they're going to put Vaughn in, and if Vaughn shows something, who knows? But, you know, I've been sort of watching him warm up on the sideline. I've sort of been following practices, and they've been saying that this kid is like a Ben Roethlisberger. They're saying he's more of a statue than Romo. He's not going to do the video game type moves that Romo does, but nobody really in the league does other than various few. But he's going to be more of a three-step, five-step top guy. But they're saying he has a strong arm, he's accurate, and, you know, he's going to be able to throw that jump ball up to Dez. He's going to be able to hit Terrence Williams coming along the slot. He's very accurate on screen passes. So his development, and I just want to make this point because we do have to move on, that yes, he was drafted. This kid was not drafted. The guy I'm going to mention was drafted, but Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre for, I think, 4 years. People forgot about Aaron Rodgers coming out of college. Yeah, they drafted him, but they were like, all right, well, they got a decent backup, but they also got Matt Flynn, and they got some other people, and blah, 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 blah. And then now look at what Rodgers is. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I mean, you can never tell with these young guys what is going to happen until they get on the field. You know, I mean, Rex Grossman came into the league, and everyone was like, oh, this kid's going to be a stud. He was great at Florida. I mean, you know, and look at him. So, I mean, it goes both ways, but I think if Stephen Jones is smart, obviously you saw what he did taking Zach Martin and not taking Johnny Manziel, they think the world of this kid, and I'm going to trust their word. They've made good personnel. If this was 5 years ago, I'd be like, you know, Jerry, what are you doing? You're going senile. But with his sons involved, I trust their word. They want to develop this kid, just like I trust them in the running game this year. And I think it's all going to pan out. The thing for me, and you mentioned this last week, and we do have one more topic to get onto here. We can go a little bit more into Vaughn maybe towards the end. We only have about 30 minutes left in today's special 90-minute Monday edition, but you mentioned how you didn't like that the Dallas Cowboys' all-time sack leader, DeMarcus Ware, who's an awesome guy, by the way, you know, just Mr. Smile.
Too awesome.
There. Yeah, too, I guess, too awesome. But you didn't like how he would sack somebody and then help them up off the field. You didn't like him being the genuine good guy. You liked how Hardy, you mentioned how you can forgive Hardy, at least somewhat, for his, you know, his off-the-field altercation.
The one thing I just want to say so everybody understands, I won't forgive him for what he did. I would never condone doing what he did off the field. It's thing and it sucks. But, like I said,
I forgive him. As long as you win games, I'm going to forget all about it.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. What I can completely keep the off-the-field thing to the left, and we're going to go on the field to the right. And that's where I am with that.
Well, with me, if he – let's say we go to the Super Bowl and he gets the game-winning sack – I don't care what he did.
I agree.
I'm gonna be like, you know what? He almost killed the girl. Whatever. We're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to the Super Bowl. To me, yeah, it was egregious. It sucks. We're not gonna have him for however many games. But if he helps us win games, I don't care. Call me an asshole. I don't care. But you were mentioning sort of how you like that nasty attitude that he brings onto the field, and I think DeMarcus Lawrence has a little bit of that too. And if you look at the Dallas Cowboys team of the 90s, you look at sort of, you know, Deion Sanders didn't really have any criminal stuff going on, at least nothing too egregious. But, you know, you got Michael Irvin, Leon Lett, Nate Newton, you know, some of these guys that they've had, and I don't have the list in front of me, but they were known as, for a little while, the quote-unquote convict team. And that spilled over in the 2000s, the mid to late 2000s, when you had Pac-Man Jones come onto the team. You know, they gave guys who have had some pretty terrible off-the-field issues that chance. And a lot of people are sort of saying, well, Jerry doesn't care as long as they win. True, maybe. But I think that the quote-unquote convict team, that nasty offensive line, that doomsday defense on the defensive line, the tough corners that they had, the physical, smash-mouth, punch-you-in-the-face sort of team that they had in the 90s, I think that they're building that again. I mean, not only is this offensive line fundamentally amazing, this is a tough offensive line. Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and Tyrone Smith are big, nasty dudes. And now Lyle Collins, who he may or may not have done it, who knows, he's a big, nasty dude, too. I mean, they get the names Big Ugly for a reason. And now they've got that. They've got DeMarcus Lawrence. They've got Greg Hardy, who's an absolute man-child. And I sort of think that, yeah, we have more players. I just looked it up this season. We have more players on our current team right now, including Dez, including our corners who have had some small stuff, including now Greg Hardy, who have had some pretty terrible off-the-field things. Josh Brent, they gave a second chance to. If we are going to be the quote-unquote convict team again, I love it. I'm like, you know what? They can do what they want to do because everyone turned the blind eye to Ray Lewis, who killed a guy. You know, everyone sort of turned the blind eye to Warren Sapp and his shenanigans until the only time they really cared was when he was retired. He was an analyst. But people sort of turn the blind eye to all this stuff. They don't want to turn the blind eye to Dallas, and they don't want to turn the blind eye to Greg Hardy. If Greg Hardy went to the Patriots, everyone would be like, oh, well, he's turning his life around. I mean, look at Spikes. Spikes had a domestic thing. He's a nasty player. He's dirty. He sticks his fingers in guys' helmets and pokes their eyes. Goes to New England, he's turning his life around. He's trying to be a good guy. Okay, but Dallas sort of has that you love them, you hate them sort of thing, but I think if they can be that quote-unquote, and I'm going to use air quotes here even though you can't see it, convict team again, if it wins us a Super Bowl, I don't care if we've got, this is going to sound terrible, but I mean, I don't care if we've got, you know, a guy like Aaron Hernandez on a team. Like, I don't care. I want us to win games, and if the big nasty, you know, the big nasty dudes are going to help us do that, fine. And, you know, a lot of people are going to be pissed about this probably, but the convict team, quote-unquote, was our best team ever. now we've got a convict team again, and I just wonder if they're going to match it.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you bring up a lot of solid points. It's a weird world we live in now. It seems like sports athletes or whatever, you know, pot, you know, stealing crab legs, whatever. You know, there's theft, there's DUIs.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, we got a lot of kids, really. It seems like there's a lot of young adults that are in this league that Herm Edwards always talks about it, and I believe Chris Carter runs, like, a Welcome to the NFL seminar for rookies, where basically rookies that get drafted who are young, straight out of college, they all sit down, and it's probably boring as hell, but he's trying to offer up, hey, don't do what I did situations. Don't get in trouble with the law. You're going to be in the limelight. You're a hero to a bunch of kids, so you got to do the right thing. And it's one of those seminars. And unfortunately, a lot of people either skip it or check out, you know, mentally 3 minutes into it. And then, you know, this is what happens. We see guys beating the crap out of their girlfriends and, you know, stealing stuff, getting, you know, pulled over while they're hammered, leaving a club. It's just, it's the age we live in, I guess. It sucks. I'm not saying that there wasn't violence and all that stuff back in the 90s, but it just seems like it's a lot more common now. And I don't know if that speaks to, you know, a generational thing with being raised. I don't have the time today to go into the psychology of it. But as far as this whole, what you said, convict team and, you know, will it work? My thing with Hardy is this. If we didn't sign him, somebody else would have. And I don't care what anybody says. And, it, you know, what you said probably would have been the Pats. Well, actually, I don't know. They don't really need a DN. But somebody who's smart enough to realize that production on the field, as long as they don't get into any more trouble, it's worth it. It's a huge, huge low-risk, high-reward thing because you're getting the guy at a discount. Pretty much. We're paying the dude week to week. He's going to miss half the season at least. So we're only going to have to pay him half of the salary. He's on a base on like this basically like probationary contract, which says, hey, if you fuck around in practice, if you start pissing people off, if you do not do as we tell you, you're done. And we don't owe you a dime. And he agreed to it because he needs to rebuild his image. He needs to rebuild himself up. These are guys that I'd be, like what you said, I'd be freaking jumping at the, you know, at the opportunity to get these guys on the team, because you're basically getting a great player who now has a chip on his shoulder and a grudge because his name's getting shit on in public. So Hardy, I think, like what you said, I think he's going to have a huge year, but it won't surprise me if he doesn't, because guess what? What are we talking now? He's been out of football for a full year already. So he's been out for a full year last year, and now he's going to have to serve a suspension, which is what I think the players' union is trying to appeal, is like, hey, like, listen, dude, all right, if you want him to serve 10 games, why don't we, you know, put those 10 games towards the whole last year that he was just sitting around with his thumb up his ass. So I think that they're going to figure something out like that. Mm-hmm. But, again, it's a low-risk, high-reward scenario, man, and I think New England showed you that. They don't give a crap. They'll take anybody in.
Well, living
out
in Upstate New York, I get that all the time. Oh, what were you saying?
No. Yeah,
no,
you go ahead.
Low risk, high reward. I got it. But I'm saying living up here in Upstate New York, I get it all the time. I just was arguing with somebody last week, and, oh, well, you guys just want to sign all the, you know, the convict players. Jerry doesn't care. He's willing to do whatever. I mean, you look at some of our best players in franchise history, okay? I mean, Larry Bethea. I mean, you'll get Harvey Martin, for anybody who knows him. You know, Bob Hayes, who's in the Ring of Honor there. You look at, you know, Michael Irvin. You know, guys on this team who have Thomas Hollywood Henderson, Nate Newton. You look at guys who have done things who are some of, you know, they're in the Ring of Honor. The Cowboys have always sort of been a team who have given a chance to somebody. And for a while, the Dallas Cowboys were signing character guys, quote-unquote, but they weren't on-field quality players. And now you've got guys who might not be character guys off the field, might not be model citizens, but on the field are pretty damn good. So, I mean, I'm okay with it. And again, I'm probably going to piss off a lot of people here. If there's any women listening, I'm sorry. But we talk about this running back situation. If the running back situation doesn't pan out, if Ryan Williams goes down or we're not confident in one of the two backups in Randall and Dunbar and you know, or let's say week four or whatever, McFadden gets hurt again, which I'm not putting out of the realm of possibility, I would be perfectly fine signing Gray Rice. I mean, you know, the guy did his time.
I agree.
He's been publicly shamed, publicly embarrassed. He got his plaques and his records taken down from his high school. I mean, the guy has done his time. Just like Michael Vick when he came back in the league. The guy did his time. He apologized. He knows what he did was wrong. If we were to bring in Ray Rice tomorrow, I'd be stoked. And, in fact, I would like Ray Rice over Adrian Peterson. And I know that
yep.
Ray Rice is probably
he'll come
more
at,
egregious.
He'll come at a fraction of the cost. Bargain line.
Yeah. Yeah, a fraction of the cost. He's younger. He's still in his 20s. Adrian Peterson is going to be 31 by the time the season ends. So, I mean, I'm willing to sacrifice a little bit of off-the-field character. I'm willing to sacrifice a rap sheet for a Super Bowl ring. I am. I mean, I never really gave it much thought, but now that I break it down, you could have the greasiest, grimiest dudes on the planet when they're walking down the street. But if they go out there and they get my team a ring, I'm all for it. Keep it, you know, keep it out of football. Keep yourself from getting suspended. Keep yourself from doing whatever. You want to smoke crack. You want to smoke a little bit of weed. You want to do whatever. You know what? If you can get around it and you can stay on the field and, you know, and win us games, do what you got to do, dude. I just want that ring. The last time I was 8 years old.
Yeah, that's honesty, and that's what a lot of people aren't going to say, and hopefully that's a reason people will, you know, will listen to our show, because we're not out there to, you know, just kind of give you the, you know, the baby rules version of things and you know, what's going to make people feel good. It's I'm sorry, everybody, that's not the NFL. The NFL is a money machine. It's a bloodthirsty money machine, and it does not give a crap about any of that stuff. Okay, all the people that are holding up the championship.
And only thing else I got to say is, how about them Cowboys?
Yeah!
Yeah, exactly.
You call?
No, I'm just saying, man, like I said, it's a machine, and it does not give a crap who it runs over, and there's going to be somebody holding up a trophy this year, and if it's us, because of the convicts that we picked it up, it's not going to bother me a bit, and it's not going to bother a single Dallas Cowboys fan, no matter how old or how young, because at the end of the day, they're going to hand the trophy to Jerry. Jerry's going to pass it on to Garrett and probably pass it on to, you know, whoever, Romo and the rest of the boys, and everybody's going to be pumped because the Dallas Cowboys will be champions. It's not about one individual. It's about the team. And I think we do have enough high character guys in place to withstand a few dipshits that have made some mistakes. So it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, for me, I'm okay with it. And you know, I've been okay with it. And a lot of people don't like the fact that I'm okay with it, but I'm okay with it. I mean, obviously, and I shouldn't have said that earlier because I wouldn't want a guy like Aaron Hernandez knowing what he did. Murder is a different thing. Darren Sharper with the 9 rapes or whatever, that's a little different. But, you know, with guys like Ray Rice tomorrow, they sign him tomorrow, stoked. Guys like, you know, I can't even think of another one right now, but just stoked. Just happy to get whoever's going to help us win games. And like I said, I'm 26. Last time the Cowboys won a ring, I was 8. Last time they were relevant, I was still in college. So I mean, I had to suffer through, you know, Quincy Carter era, you know, the Rocket Ismail era, the 5 straight 5-11 seasons, the, you know, the whole thing. And I just want this team to be good. And you know, it sucks that we play in the division that we play in, the toughest division in football, because you've got a team with the Indianapolis Colts who they got Drew Luck, sure, and they've got, you know, T.Y. Hilton, who's meh. You know, this year they're going to be good. I mean, this year they've got, who'd they just get? Andre Johnson and Frank Gore. So, you know, the Colts are making moves, but the Colts, you know, half of the guys on that Colts team wouldn't make a roster in the NFCs. And, you know, they're a mediocre team in a piss-poor division, and they make the playoffs every single year and have a shot. They beat Denver this year, you know, before getting shracked by the Chiefs. And, you know, same thing with Houston before, that division. And then you look at, you know, Carolina making the playoffs 7-9, winning a playoff game. You know, Dallas plays in arguably, other than the West, the toughest division in football, and we dominated last year. And, you know, we've been in a division that has been consistently competitive for decades, and now we sort of have finally got the pieces in place. And, you know, if they've done a rap sheet, if they've smoked a little weed, if they've, you know, they've done some unsavory things, got some DUIs, did whatever, you know what? It sucks, and I don't condone it in personal life. I mean, I've never been, I barely even get tickets. Okay, I mean, you know, I'm the cleanest, I'm the squeakiest clean person you're gonna find. But
what a boy scout!
Exactly right. But if they're gonna do stuff off the field, that's their job. I know some pretty unsavory people. In fact, one of my best friends has 3 DUIs. And, you know, and is on probation and all this. And you know, I hang out with him. I don't agree with all of his decisions, but I hang out with him. You know, I don't judge them based on that, but I don't necessarily agree with their decisions. I think a lot of it's egregious, and I don't like it. But on the end of the day, if they help us win football games and they help the team that I obsess over, that I have fat heads of, that I have a Dallas Cowboy debit card, I have them on my cell phone, I have everything you can imagine. If they help us win at the end of the day.
Do you have underwear? Dallas Cowboy.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I do. I do have underwear, yep. I have everything.
All right.
I have everything. I have, you mentioned an item, and I got it, probably, in Cowboys, one way, shape, or form. I mean, if they, and I know we got one last segment to do here, so we got to make this quick, we're up against it, but if you ask me an item, and say, do you have it in Dallas Cowboys stuff? Chances are I have it. If they, you know, if they lose, I'm depressed all week. Like when I was in car sales with you, you know, if they lost, I'll sell a car or two this week. I don't really care. If they won, I walk in Monday morning, hell yeah, let's do this. Let's sell 10 cars today. Yeah, I'm stoked. I'm the happiest guy on the planet when they win. And they can beat a 1-15 Raiders team, and I'm stoked. They lose to the best team in the league, and I'm like, life sucks. I want to slit my wrist, you know? So it's one of those, it's such a love and such a passion for me that I'm willing to, and again, if you don't like it, but I'm willing to take some egregious actions and put them aside for a championship ring. Just one. I don't need another dynasty. I don't need another 2 titles in 4 years type thing, or 3 titles in 5 years like the 90s. I just need one for now. For now, and I'll be happy. 11 minutes left in this segment on the special 90-minute Monday we've got here. The stars align. Episode 2, we've covered Orlando Scandrick, who, by the way, Orlando, you just like him, you live near Orlando. Orlando Scandrick, we've covered Dez Bryant, top 3 wide receiver. I don't care who you are, and I will fight you to the death on that. We've covered some guy named Dustin Vaughn, who could be the next big thing, and we've covered, and probably pissed off a lot of people, with the Dallas Cowboy rap sheet debate. Now, the final thing we have, and we're going to be doing this throughout the off season, and throughout maybe the preseason, although they don't really have that many new guys, but we're going to be doing this as long as we can. It's going to be called Star or Not. And I don't have a sound bite for it because I couldn't think of a good one. I didn't want to be too corny. But it's about new Dallas Cowboys, guys who are practicing right now, who just have a silver helmet. They have not earned that star yet, that they don't get that until they make the final 53-man roster. And the two that we decided to cover today have been a third and fourth round pick, respectively. They are Chaz Green, who I thought had one of the coolest draft day phone calls ever. He, you know, Jerry Jones goes, "Huh, is Jerry Jones with the Dallas Cowboys? What up, you know, what's going on, sir?" You know, like just like kind of, it was awesome. And then you had Damian Wilson, who was, "Yes, sir." You can tell he's from the South. "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ready, sir." You know, so you could tell those two guys together, Chaz Green, offensive tackle, Damian Wilson, linebacker. I know you did a little bit of work on these two guys. We're going to start with Chaz Green, Dustin. Chaz Green, star or not?
I'm going star just because I like the fact that he's versatile. So he's 6'5", he's 314, he's a big boy. He obviously, you know, is comfortable on the right side, playing that right tackle position. Florida, I guess they had him playing a lot of double. Sometimes he was covering left, sometimes he was covering right. To me, that made me salivate a little bit because that means he's got foot speed. Because if he can handle, you know, those nasty DNs coming off on the blind side from the left, then that means what's the issue with throwing him on the right side? So, I mean, I'm pretty excited. By no means do I see him starting. I just think he looks like one hell of a project for, what everyone else is calling the best offensive line in football. So if he has all this potential and he actually is capable of playing, you know, both sides, that means we could potentially plug him in at a guard. I read something that said he's a possible backup center project, you know, to work with Travis Frederick. It seems like he's just got a lot to offer. And like I said, you know, on the right, Doug Free, listen, I think Doug's great. He's getting up there in age. I'm pretty sure out of our offensive line, he is one of the more seasoned. I think he's around 8-year pro. So he's going to be, you know, he's going to be hitting his peak pretty soon and starting to go downhill. And I think we saw a little bit of why I don't like Doug Free too much is because when, you know, stuff actually got rough and he went down with injuries and then we were kind of screwed on that right side. Yeah, so he did, though, for I think about 10 or 11 games. I think he was pretty solid, and I was shocked. I was stunned because this is not Doug Free's first go-round with us. We've had him on the roster for a while, and there have been years in the past where he couldn't even get on the field. So that's why I'm worried about Doug Free. But, again, with my – earlier in the show, you know my mentality. I want to get younger. I want to get faster. I want that average age to drop down hard. So – you know, a guy like Chaz Green, who's a rookie who can come in, who's just a puppy, I think that spells a lot of potential for, like what we said, best offensive line in football. I'm sure he can learn.
You know, I agree with you in that sense. I think Chaz Green is going to be a project. I mean, we got 7 minutes left here, so we will get through both. But I think Chaz Green will be a project. I think that he has a chance to come in. I think Lyle Collins is going to win that guard spot and take over Ronald Leary's job and Mackenzie Bernardo's job. But I think Doug Free, I'm monitoring that foot. It's been plaguing to him. I've been watching some of the rookie mini camps. Chaz Green sort of seemed a little overwhelmed, a little out of his element. But, again, he had played football for the first time in 6 months, and he was on a pro level. I got to see more out of him. But I'm excited. I watched his highlight tapes in college, and the dude could flat-out ball. So I'm excited to see what he can do. I'm excited to have him add depth for us. And, you know, he looks the part. And, hey, if he can play the part, I'll be his biggest fan. If he can help us win, I'll be his biggest fan. Second one is Damian Wilson, the linebacker from Minnesota, who I feel, and I don't know if you share my view on this or not, but probably just a special teams guy, right? I mean, we've already got, six pretty decent linebackers on this squad now to choose from. When they took him in the fourth round, I was a little surprised because I thought we had some other needs. Obviously, they thought differently, and that's why I'm not coaching. That's why I'm doing this. But do you think Wilson is perhaps going to do anything for us? Because they say that they think he's going to make a lot of plays, but I can't think it'd be anything other than on special teams.
Yeah, I see him. I give him a half star because I see him as, like what you said, a special teams guy. You know, nothing but a project. We're loaded at linebacker. I think this whole linebacker plethora, it's a product of last year when we were so low at linebacker and, you know, we were just trying to find anybody off the street to come suit up. And I think that's what they did. They were just being cautious. You know, this kid Wilson, he fills up the stat sheet.
But from what I read, the last like four games of the season for him, he didn't show up. They played a lot better teams towards the end of the season, and I guess he, I don't know. I didn't watch a lot of his games, but like what I said, what I read on him from the draft combine is that he has potential. He's got a solid body. He's a quick, athletic guy, but he shrunk in the spotlight for the most part. So I will never, you know, write off anybody because, like I said, there's that heart factor that you can't put into stats. But that's half star is as low as I can go. So that's where I go.
Half star, okay. For me, I think that the only chance he has to be a star in the immediate future is going to be on special teams where we need some help. You know, we've got a lot of great kick returners, punt returners in this division. We've got a lot of teams who are pretty good on special teams in this division. The only time I see him touching the field, because remember, we had Anthony Hitchens last year who we drafted, who had a hell of a year. So now we got to figure out, what are we doing with Hitchens? What are we doing with Rolando McClain? Is Sean Lee going to come back and be healthy? You know, I mean, we've got enough guys here. Yeah, we lost Durant. We lost some of our guys to free agency. But we have a pretty solid linebacker core right now. And if everyone
Didn't
can stay
Rolando
healthy.
Didn't Rolando sign with the Pats?
No, Rolando McClain's on a one-year deal with us.
Oh, I thought I saw something on ESPN the other day that said they acquired him. Maybe it was Durant. I don't know.
Let's look into that.
I could have swore we lost him.
Rolando McClain. I could have sworn he signed a one-year deal. Hold on a second. Rolando McClain. He's right here. It's the beauty of technology. No, current team, Dallas Cowboys. I think he was talking. I think he met with New England. We've got him right now. He's ours for the time being. But I think, obviously, you know, like you mentioned in the production meeting, I like the way you phrased it, Sean Lee is glass. You know, he has not been healthy. He's had knee troubles. He's had shoulder troubles. I think Wilson could come in and make some plays in nickel packages. You know, when we run the dime, when we need a little bit of extra coverage linebackers, he could possibly drop back in. But I see him being a gunner on punt return, kick return, things like that. I don't necessarily see him being a star right now. So I know it's bad radio to keep agreeing, but I will agree with you here. I'm going to get half star right now. Do I think he makes a 53-man roster? Yes. I think he will get a star on his helmet. He will be on the field when the September kickoff starts. But, again, do I see him making a huge impact right now? At this moment, no. But, again, we have a long off season and a long preseason to sort of judge that by. So who knows? Who the hell knows? Again, May 18th, 2015, 3:30 start time, 90-minute Monday here on the Stars Align with Dez and Chris. We've got about 2 minutes left here. It's 4:58 on this, I don't know if it's nice down there, I'm assuming it is, but on this beautiful Monday afternoon here. Trying to get this soundbite here to load. If it doesn't load, I'll just play the one we opened the show with. But one last thing I want to mention, this whole finish the fight thing, this whole mentality that Jason Garrett sort of instilled last year, I think that kind of got these guys going a little bit. And that sort of got these guys sort of revved up a little bit. And it took a makeshift defense and with no expectations and sort of turned them into something golden and something spectacular and something better than better than the polished. Basically, this defense is the same defense from the year before with a few new names. They're a polished turd, basically, but they way above their potential, and you got to thank them for that. So we're up against it here. We got less than a minute left, and we will see you. I don't know about same time, Tim Blake. You're going to do Monday, or can you do Tuesday next week?
I think, I don't know. We'll check it out. I think we're definitely doing Monday, but
chances are we're going to have another 90-minute Monday. If not, we will see you Tuesday, same time, same place, knuckleheads. This is the Stars Align, Dallas Cowboy Radio with Dustin and Chris.
Oh, stars, a million miles away, a missing